genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio and sharp with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, but before we get to the theme, I have a couple of shout-outs. Big shout-out to Karen listening in St. Louis, Missouri. Also, a big shout-out to Dr. Jim, also listening from St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you guys for being loyal listeners to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. As I said, every show has a theme, and today's theme is exploration and explanation. Each of my guests will help us explore her topic, whether it's applied physics, social media, or metaphysics. My first guest is on Time Magazine's 2007 list of the most influential people of 2007. She's one of the country's preeminent physicists, and we'll discuss her latest book, Knocking on Heaven's Door. My second guest is an internet strategy pioneer. She'll provide us ways to improve our web presence from her book, 42 Rules for a Winning Web Presence. My third guest is a Fortune 500 refugee, and now she takes people business on a metaphysical journey to discover an understanding of quantum universe. We'll discuss leadership for the new wired workplace through quantum leadership. And if you want to ask a question or just talk to one of my guests, you can call us at 639-0008. Professor Lisa Randall studies theoretical particle physics and cosmology at Harvard University. Professor Randall's studies have made her among the most cited and influential theoretical physicists there is in this country. She also has a public presence through her writing, her lectures, and her radio and TV appearances like this one today on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Her previous book, Warped Passages, was included in the New York Times 100 Notable Books of 2005. Her latest book, Knocking on Heaven's Door, unravels the mystery of the universe. Professor Randall has also recently pursued art-science connection by writing the libretto for Hyper Music, which will be premiering at the Pompidou Center in Paris, and she co-authored an art exhibit, Measure for Measure, that will be here in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Art Association. Dr. Randall was included in the list of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People of 2007, as I said, and Professor Randall has been featured in Newsweek's Who's Next in 2006 as one of the most promising theoretical physicists of her generation. She earned her PhD from Harvard University, and she's held professorships at MIT and Princeton before returning to Harvard University in 2001. Joining us from Cambridge, hi, Professor Randall. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you. Well, and thanks for that lovely introduction. Well, I just want to clarify for your listeners, though, the opera did already premiere, and the exhibit already was shown in L.A. It's actually moving to Harvard this fall.
There you go. So I'm behind the times. I'm going to have to fire that researcher. Anyway, thanks so much for being our guest here on the show. And what I really like is that you're an expert in both the study of the smallest objects that we know of, particle physics, and the study of the largest objects, cosmology. So I admit right off the bat that I feel intimidated by both the very large and the very small. You make this very accessible, which is why I brought you on the show. So first I want to learn a little bit more about you, because the book Knocking on Heaven's Door, clearly taken from the lyrics of the Bob Dylan song, many of my listeners are familiar with that. Why are song lyrics important to you, both in this book and in your previous book as well?
So first of all, I just want to be clear that I know I'm completely abusing the words of the lyrics. I'm not using them in the way they had them. I'm just taking the words and using them in other contexts. And I don't know that I would say it's important so much as I can't help it when I start thinking about a topic. So if I'm looking for a title or I'm thinking about an idea, sometimes these kind of words will just come into my head and I'll have fun with it. In fact, one of the funniest things when I was writing the previous book was the lyrics, the fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Ah. Thought,
that's a great lyric. Those are great lyrics to talk about physics. And then I thought, you know, maybe I'm misremembering them. That sounds almost too much like physics. And I was amazed because I went and looked up the lyrics, and there's actually a verse that's not in the movie that really was about Einstein's theory and physics. So they really were thinking of time as that extra dimension at that time.
Wow. I mean, that is incredible. I guess all common things are common no matter what you look at. And that's again, part of the interest that I have in you, because you're very eclectic. You tie in the music, as you just talked about, your art as well. So you clearly, you've got a sense of beauty, Professor Randall, no doubt about that. In what ways is your work in physics similar to the work that you do in both music and art?
Well, I think for both of them, there's a sense that there's something you're trying to understand. There's maybe even some dissatisfaction with what you have. You have this core of knowledge, this core of ideas that you enjoy and are familiar with, but there's some nagging feeling that there's something missing. And I think some of the creative impulses that go into either art or science are similar in that respect. You're trying to go beyond and tie in, make sense of things in a way that you haven't completely yet. Beyond that, I think they both require some sort of expertise. I mean, I'm not an artist because I don't have the skills of an artist. I can have concepts and I can curate an exhibit and work with artists, but I can't do that. On the other hand, I can do physics because I have the skills, the mathematical skills, the scientific skills to do that. And I think it's a combination of having very specific skills that you're really highly tuned, and so tuned that when you have these questions, you can draw on them in interesting and complex ways.
Well, it's very interesting because a lot of women are not drawn into the fields of physics. So what attracts you to physics?
Well, I think it's the same thing that attracts the guys to physics. It's a great thing to do. It's you get to understand the universe. You get to play with ideas. You get to maybe sometimes make this, you know, I don't do experiments, but perhaps you even get insights into the way the world really works. You certainly learn about the way the world really works. And I think you get to be creative in a very specific kind of and enjoyable kind of way.
All right. My guest is Professor Lisa Randall. So, Professor, tell us, what's the beauty that exists in physics? I mean, break it down for us lay people, if you will, please.
Well, of course, beauty is an elusive concept. And, in fact, one of my chapters I actually call Truth and Beauty and Other Scientific Misconceptions. I mean, beauty is not the same as truth, but beauty can be a guiding principle in the sense that we're looking for order, we're trying to understand things. One thing I always point out, though, is that, say, perfect symmetry, perfect order, is not always beautiful. It might make nice wallpaper, but it's not going to make a great painting. It's often having some underlying concept that's beautiful, but maybe having some tweak of it. Some, you know, in art, you'll have some small asymmetries, something that draws your eye that says this is what makes it interesting. And certainly the universe is so complex that even if there are beautiful underlying principles, part of the art of what we do is getting from there to understanding the actual universe that surrounds us.
Well, and that's what I want to dive in with you, if I can, Professor Randall, because there's some really fundamental ideas that you bring out in your book, which is titled Knocking on Heaven's Door. So let's start with a seemingly very, very simple question. Why do things weigh what they do? And when we think about that question, it's actually not as simple as it first appears. So talk us through this. Why do things weigh what they do? And why is that not a simple question that a three-year-old might ask you?
Well, it's actually a very subtle question, and part of the reason it's subtle is there's different contributions to particle masses, and I think you're referring to particle masses when you ask about what things weigh. What are the masses?
Yes.
Now, there's actually two different kinds of masses you can talk about. One is actually a result of, in some sense, E equals MC squared. There's energy that's involved in tying together the ingredients of a proton and neutron, elements inside the nucleus, and that energy gives mass to things. But there's another kind of mass, which is what the Large Hadron Collider is trying to understand. That's the big collider that we have near Geneva that collides together protons at enormous energies to try to make new forms of matter. And one of the questions they are probing is the question of how elementary particles acquire their mass. Now, that might sound like a very strange question. Why don't they just have mass like from the get-go? But the reason is, if you put in the principles that underlie the way we do physics and that have been shown to be right, you would make nonsensical predictions, probabilities of interactions greater than one, unless there is a mechanism that gives particles their mass. That mechanism is known as the Higgs mechanism, named after the physicist Peter Higgs.
Mm-hmm.
And if that mechanism is right, there will be, which we very much think is true, there should be experimental consequences, perhaps in the form of a single particle called a Higgs boson that we'll see at the Large Hadron Collider, maybe even the next year.
Well, talk to us a little bit more about the Higgs boson, because in popular jargon, that's really known as the God principle. So break that
God
down
particle.
For us. What's that? The God particle. Did I say principle? The God particle. God principle was a guest I had on last week. The God particle.
Well, I mean, in my book, I joke, you know, we shouldn't take the name of the Higgs particle in vain. It really is the Higgs boson, and calling it the God particle might be a bit of an overstatement, but it is associated with this mechanism that gives particles their mass. That tells us a lot about the particle, in fact, if it's there, because it tells you, for example, that it interacts the most with the heaviest particles. So we actually know quite a bit about what its interactions should be. That means we know how it would be produced at the Large Hadron Collider and what it would decay into. And so experiments are designed to look for particles with that particular, with those particular interactions, those properties. And it has to do with the fact that at some level, and this is a very subtle concept, there's this Higgs mechanism, which in some sense distributes a weird kind of charge, weak charge, not electric charge, but associated with the weak force throughout the vacuum, throughout space, in such a way that particles interact with that those charges and get heavy. So they don't necessarily have mass at the get-go, but when this Higgs field, these charges are spread throughout the vacuum, particles acquire mass. Now, you don't test that directly, but you do test anything that is responsible for spreading that charge in the vacuum, and that could be a Higgs boson, the particle they're looking for.
My guest is Professor Lisa Randall, author of the new book, Knocking on Heaven's Door, How Physics and Scientific Thinking Illuminate the Universe and the Modern World. And I want to talk about that experimentation, because you mentioned it in your earlier answer about the Large Hadron Collider that is in Switzerland right now. So go into a little bit more detail. What is the Large Hadron Collider? What does it do?
So there's really, we have to keep in mind there's two aspects. One is the machine itself, the Large Hadron Collider, known colloquially as the LHC. Then there are the experiments, the actual detectors that surround interaction points. So what you have is a machine that accelerates protons to high energy so that they can collide in a very tiny region, much smaller than the width of a human hair, really tiny region. Pieces of the proton collide, turn into energy that then turns into particles. But how do we know what those particles are? Well, there are enormous experiments that are built around the several points around this ring that's accelerating the protons. There's interaction points, intersection points of two proton beams. They intersect, they collide, they turn into new stuff, and that new stuff goes through these giant detectors. The detectors I am most interested in, because they have, or what are known as general-purpose detectors, are known as ATLAS and CMS. And what they do is they measure everything you could possibly measure about the particles. So they measure what is their momentum, what is their energy, what are their charges, do they interact via the strong nuclear force. And by piecing this information together, we hope to determine what was there in the first place.
All right, so break it down for us even further, if you will, Professor Randall. What are the implications of the research that's being done?
Well, we don't know, because we don't know what we will find. But one thing is almost for sure, we will answer this question about how particles acquire their mass, the Higgs boson question.
All right, Higgs boson.
Mm-hmm. There is a second question that we should be able to answer at these energies, and that has to do with what sets the scale, the energy, the mass of these particles? What sets the mass scale for these particles? In principle, it could have been 16 orders of magnitude higher, and that is a very, very difficult question, question that physicists like myself have been working on for 3 decades. And the answers seem that they might imply some very exotic possibilities. It could be there's even an extension of space-time symmetry, the symmetry that says physics should look the same in every direction in space, or if you're moving at constant velocity. There could be an extension of that. Or even more exotic, one of the things I'm known for having worked on, is the idea there could be an extra dimension of space, even a warped extra dimension of space. And that could help address this question.
All right. Well, boy, this is heady stuff. So, Dr. Randall.
I do also try to build up. I don't start right here. I do start by trying to explain some of the principles that underlie how we do physics and also how we got to this point. So when we jump in like this, it all seems so foreign and so exotic. But it really has been a systematic approach by going shorter and shorter distance scale, higher and higher energies.
All right. Well, in your answer, you did mention that you're known for many, many things. And one of the other things that you're really known as is an expert in dark matter and also about the energy of gravity. So let's start with gravity, because we're all familiar with gravity and how that works, or at least we understand it because we live it every day. You posit that
gravity... Not the same as understanding it.
That, very, very true. Good point, and point well taken. So you posit that gravity, black holes, and so forth, they're fundamentally a weaker force than other forces that physics
exploit. Well, I'm not positing that. Gravity is a weaker force, at least as far as we measure it.
All right.
It might seem really strange because, of course, you know, I just came back from Aspen. Believe me, you feel the force of gravity when you're trying to go uphill. But you have the entire Earth acting on you. The fact that you can jump up and down, that you can pick up a paperclip with a tiny magnet, that tiny magnet is competing against the entire Earth. And if you were an elementary particle, a tiny elementary particle, and had interactions, you would find that the force of gravity just on these particles is over 40 orders of magnitude smaller than the force of electromagnetism. It is completely negligible in our universe. This isn't anything that I have to make up a theory about. I mean, if I want to explain it, we'll want a theory, but this is just a fact, a measurement fact.
Fair enough. All right. But that leads us to the other thing that you are famous for, which is dark matter. And that's part of the reason that I asked you on the show today. So dark matter makes up 96% of the universe. Talk to us a little bit about dark matter, if you will.
Well, first of all, it's a little bit trickier than that, because dark matter consists of two things. It consists of dark matter and dark energy. The 96%, rather, of the dark stuff is about 26% dark matter. And the rest is something known as dark energy. So let's first distinguish the two, because it's important.
Okay.
So dark matter is something that, it is matter. That is to say, it clumps gravitationally. It doesn't spread necessarily uniformly. It's matter. What makes it dark, and we really should be saying transparent, but it's called dark matter, is the fact that it basically doesn't interact with light. What does that mean? It means that it's matter, but it doesn't have the same interactions as the matter of which we're made, that we have. And people find this so mysterious, but I actually find it almost more mysterious. Why should the amount of dark matter be so similar to the amount of matter? I mean, why shouldn't it exist? Why should what we experience and see, literally see with light, be everything there is? It seems completely conceivable that there's other types of matter out there that have different types of interactions. The real question is, why should the amount be so similar to what we see? The other thing I mentioned was dark energy. Now, that is not matter. It doesn't clump. It's just energy that is spread throughout the universe. It's quite mysterious. Again, the question is sort of, why does it have the amount it has? I mean, Einstein's theory allows this form of energy. It's just a uniform energy spread throughout the universe. But it, again, although it's about 70%, that number is pretty close to what we have. Our matter is about 5%. I mean, it could have been a trillion times bigger or a trillion times smaller. Again, we have this question of why are all these energies so close, and what is their true nature?
And they are fascinating questions. I'm talking to Professor Lisa Randall about her latest book, Knocking on Heaven's Door. Lisa, these are complex issues, and we've unfortunately run out of time. But what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Knocking on Heaven's Door?
Well, I really think I have two goals. I mean, one is to understand the physics going on today in a meaningful way, but the other is to really know how scientists think and also to be able to apply that type of thinking when considering the complex issues we face in today's world.
That is great. My guest has been Professor Lisa Randall. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.